You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breininger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to We'll See You in Hell. This is we've been keeping them coming to you week after week, but Joe and I haven't seen each other in about a month. Little peek behind the curtain. We had to stockpile a bunch due to holiday travel, but we're reunited, and Joe, it feels so good.
It does, actually. I'm happy to see you, man. It's been a while.
Stained. Remember Stained?
Look, if we could tie one more shitty to mediocre song into this reunion.
I was, this girl I used to hang out with, we were in high school. She was a pothead before I even understood where she got pot. We were in, like, early college. And I was straight-laced at the time. And what kept me off pot for probably 10 additional years after this was one night we're watching some show on television, Friday Night Videos or something. It might have been like a Tonight Show type
show. Sure.
And Stained, that Aaron Lewis, is sitting in a chair. He sits in a stool with his head in his hands, is how he performs, because he's so serious, you know. And he sings, "It's Been a While." And I'm getting ready to like laugh and turn and make fun of it with her. And I look and she's like leaning into the television, mouth slightly open, hypnotized by this Stained song.
Jesus.
And it ends, and I was like, well, I'm not going to make fun of her. She's enjoying the song. And it ends, and she turns to me very slowly and was like, "Holy shit."
That is a deal breaker if I've ever heard one.
Well, we were never romantically involved.
My God. Woof. Woof, woof.
Woof, there it isn't.
I remember, excuse me, I remember when the, not the last Tool album, the one, what was the one that had,
I think that was the last Tool album. You mean, I know the pieces
That's
fit.
The second to last one,
okay,
yeah.
I don't
yeah.
know the last one.
They had a slightly more watery version of that okay. sound on the next album. Anyway, when that song got released, I remember a friend of mine heard it first, and he goes, "Did you hear the new Tool song?" And I go, "No, no, no." And he goes, "Fucking sucks." And I was like, "Oh, really? That's a bummer.
Well, yeah.
It sucks?" And he's like, "Yeah." And then I was listening to the alternative station in my town, and they go, "Up next, the new Tool song coming up soon." And then they went to a break, and then after the break, they played "It's Been a While." And I thought that was the new Tool
song. Oh, wow. Wow.
He sounds enough like him that
sure he was influenced by
yeah.
Maynard.
And I was like, what the fuck? This blows. And then yeah. right after that, it was like, and I was like, oh, this new Tool song is pretty good.
I thought Nana was a cool song.
Yeah.
And I never liked Tool.
I like that song.
I actually, well, I mean, that was not my kind of music at that time, as we've discussed, but I preferred Perfect Circle to Tool.
I never liked the Perfect Circle.
I like that first album a lot.
I mean, I don't dislike them. I just don't care.
It's very melodic.
It's like Pussifer or Pucifer, however
never
you say
heard Pussifer.
It's, you know, the
wait,
actor.
I just got that. Is that Pussy Fur?
Oh, wow.
Well, holy shit. all right. Well,
I always thought it was a play on Lucifer, but pussy, like Pussifer. But I think you're right. I think it's both. I think it's Pussifer and Pussy Fur. And the lady from Resident Evil's in that band, isn't she?
Mila Jovovich?
I believe so.
That can't be right.
I'm almost positive.
All right.
If we had a research person here, but I don't care enough to Google
it. I don't care enough to even look at my phone. speaking of, by the way, I know I really, I had a lot of time off and I got to really peruse through the Facebook page and I engage with y'all every couple days and it's a lot of fun for me. But you guys were giving us a lot of shit on one of these posts about being on our phone at the movie theater. And it was going back to the Justice League. And folks, Last Jedi, we weren't bringing the phones out. This is Justice League 4 weeks into its release.
It's my second viewing of it.
His second viewing. Six people. They're bothered by the lights from the phones.
Okay.
There's six people in the theater. No one like behind us who would be bothered by it. And I don't do that. I don't bust my phone out for movies. That's kind of like a holy time. You gotta watch that shit. Just wanted you to know we're not those annoying people. Although, in terms of things that you could do that piss people off at a movie theater, for me, that almost doesn't register. If someone in the row in front of me has their phone out, it honestly doesn't bother me.
It's not too bad for me.
If it's constant.
It's the modern day version of talking during the movie. People don't talk as much during movies anymore.
That's not true at all.
All right.
I saw a shushing go down the other night where I thought these guys were going to kick the shit out of the shusher to the point where I was genuinely scared.
I shush.
I've shushed.
Yeah.
Well,
we
know the Bad Santa story, of course.
Yeah. But yeah, I've shushed grown men.
Yeah.
But
it has to be done.
I can't stand people talking during a movie. I can't fucking stand it. No. I've yelled at middle-aged women.
Wow.
To the sitting next to me, two women in their 60s.
You were dating them.
I was.
At the time, you were in sort of a Zach Morris where you were dating them both.
It was a hot three-way. It was open. We lived in a cabin and did. We wrote books together.
You met at a hometown buffet, if I'm not mistaken. She was at the chocolate fountain.
I've always wanted to. How is hometown buffet? I always wanted to go.
Is hometown buffet old country buffet?
No, I don't think so.
Oh,
old
okay.
country buffet was an East Coast. Well, I knew it as an East Coast thing. I've never seen one on the West Coast. I don't think they exist anymore.
Either, but they might be out of business even. My big once a month out to a restaurant with my family, sadly, was to Old Country Buffet.
That was a spot for us, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great.
I loved it. That's why I want to know how Hometown Buffet. Why don't we just go to Hometown Buffet one day?
I'll do it. There's one up in Burbank.
Actually,
everything you want that you think doesn't exist here is all up in Burbank.
I'm going to toss this out to the fans. I haven't even run this by you. The idea just popped into my head.
Glad I'm sitting down.
I want give us feedback on the Facebook group about this. How would you guys feel about a tier on the Patreon where you give a certain amount of money and Pat and I take you to Hometown Buffet in Burbank?
You'd have to be local. I would actually not allow somebody to fly out here just to do that. I love that idea.
I'm serious. I'm pitching.
You know,
that out
I would
there.
Do it. Of course.
All right. So we'll do it if you guys want it, and you let us know if you want it.
So now let's get on with the show, and at the same time, let me think. On with the Joe Sheila. Let me love you till the morning comes.
Very good.
Right.
Very good. Now,
our audience might not know that. Although, weirdly, today I was, Joe, all the fans were wishing me a happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thanks.
I wish you happy birthday.
It's my birthday today,
God
folks.
God damn it. I said it yesterday and I forgot to say it again today. Sorry.
It's fine. I'm breaking your balls. You said it yesterday. But I realized our fans are around our age. For some reason, I always think of them as being these young kids who wouldn't know a song like Oh Sheila. But there were a lot of them who were our age or older. So
I think of them as much younger than I just find myself. I look at myself as a decrepit, dying piece of shit.
God, same here. I mean, I put on a face mask last night. And it's because, like, for whatever reason, 1 to 36 birthdays had no effect. I was never like, boy, you're getting old. I never do that shit because I don't feel much different than I did 10 years ago, aside from a wildly depressed streak. But 37 for some, maybe it's the seven, the additional syllable or something. It feels that today felt old.
See, I think 37 is a juicy one. I enjoyed 37. I was like, oh, I got 3 hot years left before 40. When do you hit 40?
Yeah.
I mean, 40 I've actually enjoyed.
What if you and I pitch a buddy comedy? Well, I'm not going to cast it just yet. I want to tell you a little bit about it first. Called 3 Hot Years.
Uh-huh.
And you and I have been lifelong friends. We wake up, it's our 37th birthday. The one guy's like, I feel old, la la. The other guy's like, what are you talking about? We got 3 hot years. And we see, maybe in real time, those 3 hot years unfold.
In real time.
It's, yeah.
Well, your 3 acts are your 3 years, I would think.
So your movie's structured, our movie's structured. Who do you see in it? I think Vaughn is too expected, and Vaughn is also in his late 60s.
There's no bigger Vince Vaughn fan on planet Earth than me, but yeah, he is not pulling off 37 on camera these days.
I watched this movie called Brad's Status, which I actually really enjoyed with Ben Stiller.
Oh, is that the one with Dustin Hoffman and him?
No, that's that too.
Meyerowitz Chronicles. Wait, what's Brad's Status again?
It's a Mike White movie.
It's like another Greenberg type thing, isn't it?
Yeah, but just a very depressing comedy kind of.
Right.
And he's a guy who obsessively compares himself to all of his friends' life. And it's kind of really just kind of almost like a nice little fable almost about how you know, we actually see what is going on in the lives of these people that he thinks are having such a better time than him, and et cetera.
Oh, that's cool.
It was really, really good and kind of funny. And the kid who played his kid was awesome. And Stiller was awesome.
Stiller's
while talking about it, I loved it more than I even realized. It was very good.
Stiller is always great. Hey, before we get
I hate to run us over to Pat's Movie Corner before it's time. And we haven't even cast this project, but move on.
Well, I let's cast it. I'm going to say...
I'm thinking Prince Jr. in a comeback role. But then we'll need a more established star.
Right off the top of my head, Channing Tatum, I'm going to toss him right in.
And he's the right age. That's good.
And then I'm going to put next to Channing Tatum a Chris Pine or...
You know, you're making a classic Hollywood mistake. 2 handsomes, no comedian.
Well,
you got to go 1 comedian, 1 handsome.
I'm going to go versatile here and also fresh faces and also get your show a little more attention.
Okay.
I'm going to throw Tony Rock in there. I think Tony Rock would be spectacular in 3 hot years.
Tony Rock would be perfect for 3 hot years. My show would have to be a massive hit for him to jump into the lead in a feature film.
Well, it's an indie.
You guys are going to love Tony Rock. I was about to say his age, but he's older than you think, and the fact that that man hasn't popped is crazy. He's so funny.
Pat, I say it to myself
great actor.
In the mirror every morning.
Yeah.
About Tony Rock.
All right. Well, I do want to get
Before we go to Pat's Movie Corner.
Yeah.
Shout out to Do or Dive in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn.
Oh.
One of the greatest bars in all of New York City. One of the bars I plan on spending quite a bit of time at in my upcoming stints in New York. I've always loved the place. I've been back a few times. I have a fucking blast every time I'm there. And one of the bartenders, whose name is escaping me, and I'm so sorry, but he's a tattooed man. If I remember correctly, he was bald with a mustache. I do have a video of
him. That's a good look.
Somewhere on my phone. It was a very, I think he had a Bronson look, like Tom Hardy in that Bronson movie.
Sure.
Anyway.
I was thinking Bronson Pinchot.
Yeah.
So, same difference.
I had been drinking at this bar for hours with my friends Heist and Michelle, and we were having a blast.
Heist?
Heist. Okay. He's from Holland.
All right.
Great guy. Michelle is my favorite lady in all of New York City, and we just had a blast.
Not Lady Liberty?
Right behind Lady Liberty. And Lady Luck.
It's hard to compete with Lady Liberty, folks.
But we were just having a blast, and just time went on, and hours into this hang, the bartender goes, "Huh, I fucking know I knew you. I know I knew you from somewhere, man." Right. And I was like, what's up? Where? And he goes, we'll see you in hell. I knew your voice. I listened to your podcast, man. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. So I did a video of him screaming that he loved the podcast on the phone. And I said, give us an On with the Joe. And he did it. And that's how you knew he was a real fan, because he went On with the Joe. Like,
nice.
He did. And then I sent it to Pat.
Nearly crashed my phone downloading a 4-second video.
But it was just a wonderful, nice cool, little surprise at an awesome, awesome bar. So if you're ever out in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, if you're ever in Brooklyn, period, if you're ever in New York, period, make your way out to Bed-Stuy. Go to Do or Dive. It's a fucking great bar. Great drink specials, cheap beers. It's awesome. Just go.
Can I tell you about a quick fan encounter? Maybe that'll be a new segment where our adoring public...
Close encounters with the fan kind, we could call it.
It never happens to me. It did briefly in my Vine days, but it doesn't anymore. I was in Sacramento with Heather.
Uh-huh.
And
For Christmas,
yeah. So, you know, Heather's about 5 years younger than me, and her sister's about 5 years younger than her, so it's a very different age group, but we were going to meet her friends at a karaoke bar. Mm-hmm. And it was a real kind of redneck type joint. We walk in and it's like 10 of her friends who are like 25 years old. And I just felt old, and I don't know anyone there already. So it's a little awkward. I'm not from Sacramento, but we're trying to hang out. And the kids are kind of giving me the cold shoulder, if I'm being honest. Then from across the bar, I hear a booming voice go, Pat Walsh. Turn around. Never seen this kid before in my life.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking, did I knock his wife up or something? What's going on? And comes over. Huge handshake. Couldn't have been a nicer guy. Just a fan. He listens to the podcast. He seemed to... more knowledgeable about myself than myself. He was like, my favorite thing of yours is... And I'm like, I don't recall saying that, but all right.
It's a nice thing.
It was great. It was very cool. And
now, did you bang this guy after?
We fucked, yes.
All right.
But Heather watched. That's something we like to do.
Yeah. That's. I heard that's the only way she can get it off these days.
Is watching me Roger another gentleman?
Yeah, I like to watch, she says. She tells me that whenever we get too drunk.
You see, I look over and in the darkness you just see a cigarette get lit. The flame appears in the darkness and it's Heather's face watching, her eyes wide open as I... sadly try to force my penis into an adoring fan.
Folds it in half so it feels erect in some way. Anyway,
let's go to the movie corner now that we've sucked our own dicks.
Let's go. I got a bunch for this one.
I have so many. I have been watching 3 to 4 and in some cases 5 movies a day because I worked so much and now I'm off for a long time and it feels great.
Well, that's a lot. So
no, I know. Well, I'm not going to go through all of them. I won't go through all of them.
All right. There you go.
Most important to me, I want to get out this movie, folks. Haven't seen it on a single top 10 list. All the top 10 lists are the same. The same shitty pieces of shit that we'll be discussing, maybe one of them on this show. Everybody raves about the same movies.
I know, it disgusts me.
Because they're scared to venture out on their own. They're scared
it
to, like...
It disgusts me.
Say, oh, well, you know, when I was a critic, half-ass critic, whatever, I went to the screening of Memoirs of a Geisha.
Uh-huh.
And this guy... fell asleep and was asleep. I mean, I told the story on here before, but this critic, well-known critic from the New York Post or whatever, fell asleep half hour in. It was a very boring movie. Wakes up because someone woke him up when the credits were done, and the man raved about Memoirs of a Geisha in the next day's paper.
Jesus Christ.
It's, I mean, disgusting. I know this shit goes on.
It's disgusting. It's yeah. So I have, now you do yours first, but on that note, I'm going to do my first one after your first
one. All right, great. Maybe we'll shine a spotlight on some lost gems. Is that what you'll be doing?
No,
as well?
What I'm going to do is talk about the same old shit.
Oh, okay.
yeah.
Well, that's in our new segment, SOS.
Yeah.
Right before PS, I Love You. this movie is called The Work,
mm-hmm.
which is honestly a bad title. It's not memorable, but once you see it, it makes a lot of sense.
Never even heard of it.
But it's the kind of title that somebody tells you, you got to see The Work, and then 3 hours later, you're like, did they say The Job? Like, it's a bad title.
The Help?
So, yeah,
exactly. The Room?
So please write it down, The Help. And it is now 99 cents on Amazon and iTunes.
No, you just said The Help.
Did I?
Yes.
Holy shit. Folks, it's called The Work. Erase The Help and write The Work. 99 cents on Amazon, 99 cents on iTunes. It is a documentary about at Folsom Prison. Is that in Sacramento? Up by Sacramento?
I always thought Folsom Prison was like in the South. That's why Johnny Cash did that album there. I don't know.
Sure. Well, I mean, there's a city called Folsom up there. But anyway, Folsom Prison, once a year, people from Folsom are invited, if they want, to go in and fraternize and have a sort of group therapy session with the prisoners.
Oh, that's cool.
So already you're like, oh, great. And you can, I imagine they'll make this into some schmaltzy piece of shit movie with Sandy Bullock or something. But, I mean, this thing for 90 minutes, and I am a man who is, as we've discussed, very dead inside.
Yeah.
Just an emotional void. Nothing. Yeah. I'm now, because of this movie, happy to share this with you and not ashamed. I sobbed like a small bitch from 2 minutes in till the end of this thing. I was making noises like I will say sobbing perhaps.
Yeah.
And I don't want to tell you too much about it, but it's essentially guys. It's all dudes, and these guys go in and they're all just kind of like, I can't imagine myself breaking in here. They're judging these hardened criminals who are trying to force themselves to open up and access their past damage, and it's really hard for all of them. And then finally, one guy will make a little breakthrough, and then there's a guy who's such a fucking asshole who comes in from the outside, and he's like, "Can I just make a quick like judgment here?" He goes, "I mean, you had a little breakthrough there. That's fine, but like, you know." Won't you be right back in the same place tomorrow?
Are you kidding me?
Like, this guy's been in there an hour. And then the hardened criminals at certain points get real angry with the people from off the streets.
Sure, of course.
There's screaming matches and everything else. But what the movie is really is every 10 minutes, a man who looks like he's killed hundreds of people will have like a deep, dark emotional breakdown brought on by this group of like loving, supportive men who have to make an announcement at the beginning. When we step in this room, we put aside our Crip and Blood differences that exist out there. There's Crips and Bloods in each of these groups.
All right, then I'm assuming it must be California prison.
I think it is, yeah. But I tell you what, but the thing blew my mind. And then I also started thinking, should this movie be released? These people are bearing their fucking souls and having like these really personal... But I think the reason they all agreed and consented to have their faces in it, I would imagine, is because it would help people. I would say that it changed my life. I would recommend watching it very, very highly.
You sold me on it. I'm going to see it. Not often do you sell me on a movie. I don't mean that in a shitty way. I just mean you'll rave about things, and I'll say I'll check it out if I see it.
Yes.
You know, this I'm going to go hunt down and watch.
Well, it's a dollar.
Yeah, well, my dad.
Beautiful movie.
My dad is a deacon in the Catholic Church. He used to go and talk to the prisoners at Greaterford Prison, where we used to live. And I always thought that was a pretty cool thing, you know. So I'm very interested in this. I'm going to switch it up. I'm going to save the one I was going to bitch about for later.
Okay.
You got me on an emotional track here. I finally saw Lady Bird.
Yeah.
10 minutes into the film, I was texting Pat saying, I'm just dead inside. Nothing. I don't feel anything anymore.
Yeah.
I hate this goddamn movie. I was supposed to love it. I hate it. This main character is awful.
Yeah.
Pat was like, stick with it. Stick with it. I was like, oh, fuck it. I'm more interested in the friend who she's treating like garbage. And the parents are trying to keep the damn family afloat. And this kid's just running around being an asshole, demanding she be called this ridiculous name.
Well, Joe was saying, why isn't the movie about the fat friend? why isn't it about the parents? I'm like, Joe, it's all of those things and more.
And then as I continued to watch the film, I saw that Pat was right. I was jumping to conclusions. I realized that my reactions to this character at the beginning of the film were my own hatreds and criticisms about myself from that age.
Wow.
The shift in this movie is impeccably written, that you see a daughter in the sort of domineering, spiteful position for the first half, and then it almost seamlessly transitions to where the mom is doing it.
Yeah.
And you realize these are two people that love each other very much and don't know how to express it properly and get frustrated and then do and say things they don't really want to do or say. It's beautiful when she reunites with the friend that she disregards.
Loved it.
I mean,
it was a perfect choice of song. I was like, I don't even care that it's Dave Matthews. It's a really great moment.
That when it cuts to them singing that on the hood of the car, it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. The play auditions were one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's what people are kind of forgetting, I think. I never even see it mentioned in reviews, is that it's really, really funny.
It's hilarious. The kid
that's how
from,
I feel about Sopranos. Like,
kid from
nobody mentions it as a comedy.
Right. Kid from Manchester by the Sea hits a fucking home run.
Just love that kid.
Devastating scene when he's crying and he's like, I'm just so ashamed. Please don't tell anybody.
That guy is, I know his last name is Hedges. He's the son of Peter Hedges, who wrote my favorite book of all time, What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
Oh, okay.
Not the novelization of the film. It was a book first.
Right. The novelization of the film was written by J.K. Rowling's.
Needed some cash.
But it's just a beautiful movie. It's so true to life. My hat's off to Greta Gerwig. She did a really, really phenomenal job. And the fact that it took me through the emotional roller coaster it did, where I was furious at the top of this thing.
Right.
And then laughing and then sobbing at the end when she calls the mom and thanks her. And
yeah.
And I did that. The thing she does at college. I remember going to college and it echoed a lot of the relationship with my mom that I have. You know, there were a lot of similarities there. But the one thing I really related to the most was the being brought up Catholic school, very much denouncing it to people, going to college and feeling so isolated and so alone, thinking all my problems are going to be fixed. And then going to church in college.
Right.
When I first got there, because I just didn't know where to turn. And you're just trying to find anything that feels like a tie to home that you can relate to, where you're not being judged. And that also is saying, fuck these assholes that you're in school with that think they're too cool for anything or whatever.
Right.
It was just a beautiful, beautiful movie. I loved it.
Metcalf.
She deserves an Oscar for it.
I think it's going to come down to her and Janney.
She
and
does.
Tracy Letts, who I never like, I loved as the dad. What was his line in the car? I laughed so hard at one of his lines in the car, and you just saw it. I forgot it. He's like driving her to school. He had some great joke I remember really enjoying.
Metcalf is, I mean, it's a half-court swish.
Yeah, she's awesome.
And the main girl is good, too. I can't remember her name.
Saoirse Ronan.
Yeah, it's a
star of Brooklyn.
Yes.
One of my favorites from a few years back.
But that thing where Metcalf is just like, why don't you just go to City College and then go to jail and then get out of jail and go back to City College.
Right,
like,
right.
It was just so funny, man. It was really great.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I loved her, the adopted brother-sister characters. Like,
they were great.
There was just a lot of great shit in it. I would say, like, you know, anyone reading that script would be like, cut the brother and sister characters.
Now you need them because when you start to question the mom... You realize she's taking these two
kids in,
and it's fucking beautiful. And
I'm not saying it was the right note, Joe. That's the note you would get.
Well, I feel like you think like a suit these days.
I do. I can't help it. Which means I'm wrong 100% of the time.
I like to think I think like a G-string bikini, but that's just me.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I said you think like a suit. I think like I think wild. I don't know. It was a joke.
I got it.
Harry, what else you got?
I mean, I've seen every big movie, so I don't want to do them all. I'll say I saw The Post, Tom Hanks, Meryl Streep. This thing is raved about on every top 10 list as well. Folks, I got three words for this movie. Z Z Z. Snoozeville. It's boring. And Spielberg is lazy in it. Hanks is lazy in it. Streep is lazy in it. Then Odenkirk and Cross have a little role.
They do?
And I'm like, oh, sweet. They're like reporters at the paper.
Like a duo?
Yeah, they talk a lot and hang out.
No, but I mean, are they together?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Are they funny?
No.
It's not a funny part?
No. They're just like reporters at the paper. I mean, it's certainly an average movie. This is the problem when you see these movies late. Like when I saw Joe was watching all these screeners now, you're gonna kind of hate them because of all the hype. You got to see these movies kind of early or else you can't escape the hype in your mind. But yeah, The Post, I was just like, this? They're like, the movie we need now more than ever and all this shit. I'm like, come on.
I look forward to watching it. I do have a screener here. Look, I'll say the same.
It's fine.
Another film I saw that, well, you know what? Let's hold it. Let's keep it to two each because we're already at the 30-minute mark here.
All right, I have about 40 more, honestly.
All right, well, I'll do one more, you do one more, I'll do one more, all right?
Okay.
I saw, I'm saving the third one for third. I also saw I, Tonya. Yeah, I know you've seen it. Again, I was sort of up and down through this thing. Ultimately, I liked it. Ultimately, I did feel bad for Tonya Harding. And again, it's a movie that pushed my buttons, and I like that. There were times in the movie where I felt sorry for her. There were times in the movie where I was almost yelling, "Oh, fuck you, lady," at the TV.
Right.
And it's nice to see movies that are doing that again. That's not what movies are supposed to do, but what movies can do. And when they're well done, they can do that.
Yeah.
And I'm speaking specifically now to James Gunn's response to Jodie Foster. Jodie Foster's right. She's like, going to the movies anymore, it's like going to a goddamn amusement park.
Right.
And then James Gunn is like, I love Jodie Foster, but she seems to think that a blockbuster film can't be thought-provoking. I'm sorry, Mr. Gunn. Are you trying to insinuate that Guardians of the Galaxy is thought-provoking?
Uh-huh.
Stop it. This movie was thought-provoking. You didn't know how to feel. You were laughing, and then you were kind of cringing, and then you were laughing at shit. You didn't even know if you should be laughing at it.
Right. Oh, so you liked it.
Ultimately, I liked
it. The text I received from you was quite negative.
I said, I'm 20 minutes into I, Tonya. Okay. I'm not that impressed.
Yeah.
But again, what I realized was I haven't seen, and this is the same thing I realized with Lady Bird, I haven't seen a movie come out of this sort of, and these are indies, but they're still Hollywood fare. I haven't seen a movie in a long time come out of the sort of Hollywood market that made me feel that way.
Right.
And I wasn't mad at it. I just wasn't, I was looking at it as a Hollywood film. And so when you start to not like something, my first reaction is, oh, I'm supposed to like this person. These fucking executives are telling me this right. is who I'm supposed to. And then you realize, no, because honestly, quite frankly, it's like a Lena Dunham Girls thing for me. I really liked Girls in the beginning, yeah. But when the other shoe never dropped and there was never a reckoning for all these characters acting very selfishly and stuff.
It never comes either. I watched the whole thing.
I was like, well, fuck you then. Like, yeah. This is what this was, you know, like, so I kind of have that in my head and I need to get that out of my head that that's what this thing is going to be. And I did like I, Tonya a lot. And I like the part where I'm paraphrasing it, but she kind of says the thing like, you're all no better.
Right.
Than the guy that beat me or whatever, you know? I like it. I like that she's like, yeah, you're all bloodthirsty.
Yeah.
Fuck yourselves. I love that the last shot is a pool of blood on the mat.
Right, right, right.
You know, almost saying like, come lick this up, you fucking animals. You know, yeah. Like, I liked it. I thought it was a cool flick.
At that line when she's like, you're all as bad as I watched it with my mom. She said, you're all just as bad as the guy who, you know, did this. My mom goes, well, I don't know if that's true.
It's not, yeah, I wouldn't say we're quite as
bad. We're not as bad.
But yeah.
And Janny.
Janny's fantastic in it.
Janny is real fun in that movie.
But I would put the award nod to Margot
Robbie
over Janny.
Okay.
Janny was great.
Love Robbie in it.
Jenny was great.
Robbie.
Margot Robbie. Yeah. Jenny was fantastic. I'm not taking anything away from Jenny, but I've seen Jenny in sort of similar roles to that before. Not saying it's not great. It's just I've seen her in similar roles. Margot Robbie to me, I was like, that's fucking, she's Tonya Harding. At one point I was like, this is the same girl who played like fucking Harley Quinn in the Suicide Squad movie.
Right.
And
career's seen some real lows and some real highs.
Yeah, exactly. And the wife in
Wolf of Wall Street.
So I just thought it was the first time I'd seen her go to that kind of emotional depth, and I really liked it, and I thought she was great.
Also, should I tweet this right now?
What?
Air Bud, colon, Wolf of Wall Street.
Like you're pitching that as a movie?
Yeah.
Okay, now let's cast this film.
All right. Let me write this down, by the way, because that's good.
All we need are a dad and a kid. My pitch for the dad is Rick Moranis in his comeback role. Actually, he's probably the grandfather.
You're not going to get him.
Okay. My pitch for the dad, I'm going to say Billy Gardell, a buddy of mine from stand-up comedy.
Of Mike and Molly fame?
Yeah. I could see him being the Air Bud dad.
Oh, okay. We're doing like a direct-to-video. These movies aren't theatrical anymore. It could be Billy Gardell.
Well, we don't need to knock Billy and Tony down.
I'm not knocking Billy or Tony. I'm saying they're not at the level where they're opening a feature studio film.
I don't think Air Bud, Wolf of Wall Street.
That's what I'm saying. We're going direct to video with it.
I think even if it hit theaters, a Billy Gardell could star in it.
Yeah, I think you're right. They'd get French Stewart.
I'm going to put him in the dad role, and then I'm going to put the kid. I'm going to put the black kid from Stranger Things in the kid role as an adopted son of Billy Gardell.
Wow.
And I think we got the makings of something really good here.
But why? Like, you've always thought those two would be good together?
I just think they're both got a lot of charisma, and I could see it working.
All right, fair enough.
All right?
Fair enough.
And then I'm going to put in Brad Garrett as maybe the bad guy coach of the other team.
I mean, I don't want to see this movie.
Do you want to see any Air Bud movie? Is there an Air Bud movie you want to see?
No, that's true. It's noon. I'm going to tell Vince 12:15. Another step behind the curtain, folks. 12:20?
I tell him 12:20. Listen to that. I tell him 12:30.
12:30.
This is Pat planning. As I'm casting a brilliant film here, he's planning lunch plans with our friend Vince.
It's my birthday lunch. You know, the last time we people did a big discussion about what was their favorite fight of ours on the show.
Right.
Boy, it was taking me back to some funny memories. But the only one that I went back and listened to was everybody was talking about Rogue One, which was 1 year ago today, probably. But it had just been my birthday, remember we had the big thing about I invited you guys over to my house and you're like, you'd rather go to a bar. That was when I started on, well, because there's nothing to fuck there.
Yeah.
So I listened to this entire episode again. I was laughing so hard because it starts like there's barely an intro and you and I are just so angrily arguing with each other. And it goes on and on and on for like a half hour.
Right.
It's all very funny. We're laughing.
Right.
But, yeah, that we've really lost the argument element. It was so intense to listen to.
Pat, this world has beaten me down to a place where I can't turn on my loved ones anymore. I don't have the time, I don't have the energy, I don't have the balls.
I completely agree. Completely agree.
Look, we're at the 37-minute mark. Why don't we move out of the movie corner? We've got plenty for future episodes.
We're getting into Joe's scary stuff.
Yeah, and I got a real quick one. I don't know if you have one or not, but Full Moon Pictures. I don't know if they're still doing it, folks. They had a great sale going on over the holidays. A lot of their classic films restored and on Blu-ray. And they looks like they've done a very nice job with these. I like the packaging. I like the cover art. And they are actual restorations, according to the website. So go over to Full Moon Features. FullMoonDirect.com, excuse me.
These movies are just like trash, right?
Well, some of them, they have trashy elements, but they're very fun horror movies. So I got The Creeps, Deformed Monsters. I got hideous deformed freaks. I got a Rituals of the Occult 3-pack that has Totem, Voodoo Academy, and Netherworld on it.
Voodoo Academy.
And I also got Head of the Family.
Now let me throw this at you, speaking of J.K. Rowling. Do you think perhaps some elements of Harry Potter came from Voodoo Academy?
I've always thought that she's lifted
Voodoo Academy.
Yeah, I've always felt that she lifted the best parts of those stories from most of the Full Moon Features production. Anyway, so go on there. They have these things for like $11. Like I've had the creeps on my Amazon wish list for a long time, and it was fairly priced on Amazon. It was like $15 or something, but getting it directly from the company that made it and only having to pay $12 and then they get the bigger profit was, you know, obviously the best scenario for all parties. So yeah, go check that out.
I got a quick one. It's not and I'm going to say it's scary stuff because adolescence is a scary time, Joe. I want to recommend the new Criterion edition of The Breakfast Club.
Okay.
John Hughes is my number one. I love him. His movies were my, you know, Star Wars when I was growing up.
Uh-huh.
And there's very little information about, like, you rarely get to see him talking or directing or hear interviews with him because he was a very private man.
Mm-hmm.
So the special features on this thing are fantastic. If you're a fan of Hughes, Breakfast Club would be one of my least favorite John Hughes movies. But one of my least favorite of his movies.
Really?
What
the hell are you putting above Breakfast Club?
Of his classics, I mean.
Well, no, I know, but I'm saying,
here's what I put above Breakfast Club. 16 Candles. If I'm being honest, Weird Science.
Okay, I'll give you Weird Science, and I'll give you Ferris Bueller.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off was next. Uncle Buck.
No fucking way.
100% way. Planes, Trains, Automobiles, obviously.
I'll give you Planes, Trains. You're way off on 16 Candles and Uncle Buck. Come on, man.
Without question. I'm sorry. And I really love The Breakfast Club.
All right.
But that's how much I love John Hughes. I think he's got better stuff. Honestly, I mean, Home Alone, even though he didn't direct
shut
it.
Shut the fuck up.
I prefer Home Alone.
Moments after I said I can't argue with my friends anymore, you're enraging me.
Yeah.
Home Alone?
If we're going movies he wrote.
Over The Breakfast Club?
Home Alone, National Lampoon's Vacation.
Okay, I'll give you that one.
By the way, just listen to these credits.
I know. The guy he's the Scorsese of tit comedy.
Well, he didn't do tit comedy.
I know. It's just a funny phrase.
And you'll learn that when you watch the special features on The Breakfast Club. Anyway, it's the restoration, as with all Criterion shit, it looks unbelievable. And the special features, there's an hour of deleted scenes on the thing. And what has me rock hard, Joe, not the way you're sitting right now in a pair of shorts. What has me rock hard right now is that there is a 3+ hour cut of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles that Hughes showed to his friends and recorded the laughter.
About it. You've told me about it. Are they going to release it finally?
Once they start with one director, Criterion, they tend to kind of stick with them. If they love this and it's a big seller, I could see it happening.
Well, I'm excited.
Nothing would make me happier in the world. And he recorded a commentary for the DVD that he pulled from the DVD. He was like, I don't want people to hear this much about the movie. I'm pulling it. So the commentary exists. They could put that on this thing.
I'm going to buy it. I'm going to buy the Breakfast Club Criterion. I also want to get the Night of the Living Dead Criterion.
Oh, sure. Of course.
You know, I love how they waited till George Romero was dead for him to finally get the profit off of this fucking classic movie he made.
Right.
I'm splitting hairs here. It's great that they put that out, and I look forward to getting a copy of that. All right. Our film of the week. We are reviewing a little piece called The Shape of Water.
Guillermo del Toro.
His latest feat. It's a movie, if, in case you're unaware, about... It's sort of a throwback, I would say, to the Universal monster movies of the 40s and 50s. Not in a sensational over-the-top sense as they eventually became, but the true early ones like the original Dracula and Frankenstein and so on, where, you know, it's a monster movie in a sense, but it's really a movie about the characters, and it's got a soul to it, and it's a human story and blah, 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 and the horror elements are there, but they take a back seat to that. So this woman who is mute, she can hear, but she can't speak, works in a top secret government facility as a janitor, and she falls in love with a top secret government
project
who that turns out to, it's a fish man.
It's a fish man, folks.
Yeah, so anyway.
That's what you're waiting for, the big reveal.
So anyway, that's the gist of the film. It's about lonely people finding one another. Her only friend is played by, what's his face, from
Dick
the Bongo
Jenkins.
Movie.
Richard Jenkins,
who plays...
The Bongo movie.
Who plays a gay man in, like, the 50s. So he is very lonely because he's very closeted, and she's his only friend, and... Obviously, the fish man's lonely. He's living in a goddamn government facility tank.
Right.
And then Michael Shannon plays the bad guy, and he's clearly...
Really, kind of a new type of performance for Mike Shannon. I've turned on that guy. It took me a long time because I loved him so much, but now I'm like, come on, dude. Mix it up.
He does... Yeah. He likes playing those bad guys. Now, I'll say
weird
this.
Sex scene with Mike Shannon in this movie.
It wasn't necessary.
Absolutely not.
It wasn't necessary. There's a sex scene in the movie where he's fucking his wife, and she's talking like, you know, she's giving him a little dirty talk, 1950s right. style. So it's right. just like, oh, yeah, mama. You know, it's shitty, dirty talk. Yeah.
Bake me up a couple of them apple pies.
Yeah, yeah. Leave it to Beaver. then he covers her mouth and he goes, just don't say anything. Don't talk. And yeah. then you can see that that's like what turns him on. And as far as I could tell, that's only in there so there can be an unnecessary scene later where he tries to sexually assault the mute girl. And right. it's like, I already hated this guy.
Yeah. To it's me, like, I didn't even put that together. To me, I just thought it was like... So you get that he's a bad guy. I'm like, I get it from him whipping his dick out at the janitor ladies and then like slapping everyone in the face.
Yeah, and it was one of those moments like when he like comes on to the mute character and then like he doesn't force himself on her, but he grabs her inappropriately
right.
like by the arm. And with certain force and you can see that he's got it in him to potentially assault or rape or something. It's one of those moments in the movie where you're like, I don't need the bad guy to do that.
Right.
This guy is already unlikable enough. Instead of that, I'd rather you give me a scene where I see a little humanity in the guy so I can understand his motivations.
Sure.
Instead of him every scene, him being this guy that's like, fuck you, me, me, me.
Right.
I am awful. It's like, okay, he's awful. Why yeah. though? You know?
Right. Well, to that... Maybe you could have used that 5-10 minutes they spend on him to give me 10 seconds of the love forming between the mute woman, Sally Hawkins, and the fish man.
I know.
I felt nothing. These people talking about them sobbing at the fucking Shape of Water. What emotions are you feeling watching this thing? You're rooting for her to fuck the fish man? She's a beautiful woman. You see her naked 10 seconds in.
And I'll tell you something. That body don't quit.
It didn't quit. And she's mute.
Yeah.
I mean, what a dream woman,
and
folks.
She can cook.
Yes. It's like, go outside. Can't find a man? Have you left your house in 5 years? That's why you're settling for a fish man. Go to the market. Meet, yes. Introduce yourself.
It shows that her only activities are making sandwiches for Richard Jenkins as he paints.
Who's gay.
And then accompanying Richard Jenkins to hit on what turns out to be a straight man who sells pies.
Yeah.
She has no other social life. And then her friend, who I love this lady. What's the actor's name?
Octavia Spencer.
She's fucking wonderful.
Yeah.
Can Hollywood, can you let her play anything but like the sassy lady from the first half of the century?
She's literally like, so, okay, so when you think of like the sassy black friend stereotype, if you're thinking of like a romantic comedy, then it'd be like, oh, like, honey, how was his dick?
Yeah.
Let me tell you what Octavia Spencer says in the Academy Award frontrunner for Best Picture, The Shape of Water. So he's got a fish dick? It's the same thing. It just because it looks beautiful doesn't mean you're making fucking art. And it does look beautiful.
She's such a tremendous actress or actor.
She asks about the fish man's dick.
I know. And it's like, please, every movie they make her be the lady that's like, well, honey, listen to me, child. Like, they just, stop it.
Yeah.
She's good. She's great in it. She's kind of playing that same part again. Obviously, that's why I'm saying it. But everybody's very good in it. Let's look. Obviously, folks, we didn't like the movie very much. No.
It does. I will say, especially like the first half, it looks beautiful.
Yeah, let's start with the positive.
As all Del Toro shit does. It looks fantastic.
Extremely well directed. Extremely well acted. And yeah. I will say, Del Toro does stuff with the camera that excited me, and it's things I haven't seen since like early Spielberg,
right?
Like Raiders of the Lost Ark. Like there were moments in this, like when Michael Shannon's entrance, the way he has him dressed, the camera move he does, the music playing, it's literally like when the black-coated Nazi with the glasses walks into the bar in Raiders of the Lost Ark, and immediately you're like, this man is awful.
Right.
And I was like, God, the guy speaks so much with a camera. Like, he gets so much across with these shots.
I guess I wish he did other people's scripts. That's how I feel about Shyamalan, though. They're really talented directors who need to stop doing their own material.
I agree. I think Del Toro is best when he's adapting, except for Pan's. I love Pan's Labyrinth.
Pan's Labyrinth is his true masterpiece.
And his earlier stuff. But I mean, Crimson Peak was a bad movie.
It was, but I will say, you know, visually, that one, even more than Shape of Water, it held my interest for that reason alone. I thought I loved the look of it.
I like the look of this. And that's kind of where, and I liked the first half. I was really enjoying the first half. And then just this point where I was like, oh, Christ, man, I'm tired of this. Like, I'm bored. Yeah. Like, it's just dragging on and on. There's no real excitement to any of it. And I got to tell you.
Shannon with the gun out in the rain, that all that stuff at the end, I mean, I almost turned it off. I was like, that's enough. You're done. The story's over.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, a real fuck you moment for me to the main character, the mute lady.
Yeah.
That fucking scene where, so she lives above a movie theater. They live in this like kind of low rent apartment above a movie theater, and these people are obviously not rolling in dough, but they have what they have. There's a scene where she takes the fish guy into the bathroom, and plugs the door up with towels under it, so water can't get out.
Yeah.
And she turns on all the water so the bathroom can fill up and be a tank that they can like be in together while they fish fuck.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then it like it's leaking down and ruining literally the man's business downstairs.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. Your thirst for bestiality is so strong that the fucking movie theater now has to pay a debt for it. That bothered me. I was like, that's just selfish.
Yeah.
You're an asshole.
And since none of those scenes had any passion to them, you didn't even buy that, like, I gotta fuck this fish man. Like, that's the only way you sell something that insane and selfish is if it's like, I really gotta fuck this guy. They had no heat between them, no chemistry. But folks, how could you have chemistry between a woman and a fish man?
And folks, here's what it is at the end of the day. I get it. It's art. It's art. Story he wants to tell, fine. But just remember this. For all of you writing blogs about whether or not you found Dave Chappelle's humor concerning Louis C.K. appropriate or not.
Oh, boy.
There is a movie that is a front runner for the Oscars that glorifies bestiality.
That's true.
Just remember that. Just when you say, is that joke inappropriate? There is a movie that is going to get nominated for Oscars.
Best picture.
That glorifies fish fucking.
Yeah.
So everybody calm down a little bit. That's all I got to say.
I can't go any farther than that. Folks, I am at the Patrick Walsh on Twitter and Instagram. My show featuring Joe DeRosa, Living Biblically, premieres on Monday, February 26th at 9:30, 8:30 Central. Take it away, Joe.
Joe DeRosa Comedy, Twitter, Instagram, Penthouse Column, You Let Me Down every month in Penthouse Magazine. And that's it for now. We'll see you next time.
We'll see you in hell.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.